Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. More than 4,000 religions exist in the world today. That many, yet all, according to research, are centered around just 16 psychological needs deeply rooted in human nature. Stephen Reese writes about those themes in his latest book entitled The 16 Strivings for God, The New Psychology of Religious Experiences. He's a former Ohio State University psychologist and psychology professor, I should say, and he joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Your other best-selling book, Who Am I? The 16 Basic Desires That Motivate Our Actions and Define Our Personalities, sounds familiar. I imagine there's a connection. Can you talk about that?
Yes. In the Who Am I book, we were asking what makes people tick. And we did a unique way of looking at that. Others went to New Guinea and studied primitive tribes to get at what really drives fundamentally the human beings. Some psychologists did inkblot tests to study the unconscious mind. Others observed people behind screens and stuff like that. We just asked people. And at this point, we've asked over 100,000 people about their motives, what makes them tick, their values, and their goals. And we found that there were 16 of these basic desires, or 16 intrinsic motives. And that was the subject of the Who Am I book. What are those 16 motives, and how do they affect our behavior?
That was groundbreaking that you just asked people. What was the research basis for that? I mean, why not have done that a long time ago?
Psychologists really don't ask people questions very much. They don't ask people what it is they're trying to do. They don't ask about motives. If they ask anything, they ask about childhood. The behaviorists say that cognitions, the kind of answers people give to questions, can't explain anything scientifically. The psychoanalysts say that what really is important is unconscious, so there's no point asking anybody. You just get superficial conscious answers. We said, well, maybe if we ask people questions, maybe we will get good answers. And we, in fact, have pretty much proved that you do.
Because you can see then from their behavior how that reflects their responses.
Right. The answers that people gave us predicts what how human beings behave, predicts relationships very well, and predicts behavior at work and at school. And so we know the answers are valid.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Stephen Reese, Dr. Stephen Reese. He's an author and former Ohio State University psychology professor. His newest book is entitled The 16 Strivings for God, The New Psychology of Religious Experiences. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. So how did you arrive at those 16 basic desires or psychological needs? How did you whittle it down?
Well, there are mathematical techniques so that if someone says that they're motivated by, say, competence and they're trying to be competent, we can then assess, well, how much are they trying to lead? And we can then see if leadership and competence fall together into what we call an intrinsic motive or a basic desire or a psychological need. So it's done mathematically.
Were you surprised at then, therefore, that there were 16 versus 10 or 5 or I don't know? I mean, it sort of sounds like the Republican presidential primary.
No, I wasn't surprised that there were 16. What surprises me is that there are psychologists that have only 1, 2, or 3.
Okay.
I mean, it seems obvious that we have multiple needs. I mean, Freud only had one need. He said everything was sex, which is it's just hard to understand. And then Freudians, they don't explain anything in sex. They explain everything as anxiety reduction. It's hard to understand where they get that from. And social psychologists only have 3 needs. How could that possibly be?
Food, shelter. That's
yeah. Food, shelter, family life, acceptance, romance, safety, respect. I mean, how can you say there are only 3 needs? So I didn't know if there were 10 or 20, but I knew there weren't 2 or 3.
And then what about how you decided to define what they are? Because people put things in different terms. How did you arrive at, for instance, the one of the 16 basic desires or psychological needs is curiosity? How did you suss it out that was that one word?
Actually, my word was understanding. Okay. My New York editor changed it to curiosity.
Okay.
Some of this, you know, in English majors got a hold of. So we just did the best we could in trying to interpret what were the answers, that, you know, what the answers meant.
So you said that you and your colleagues are the first scholars to list out the universal motives. Therefore, this is sort of a springboard for a lot of other questioning or a lot of other answers.
That's right. We're the first to have empirically derived it, to have scientifically derived it the way I described. And it is a springboard for a lot of things.
How did you decide, or when did you realize that the results could be used to explain which religions or not that attract us?
Well, in a previous radio interview, when we first did the Who Am I book, a minister called in, and he criticized us for leaving out spirituality. And so I took a much closer look at spirituality. We didn't ask a single question about religion in our research. We didn't ask anybody if they believe in God. We didn't ask, you know, about heaven, hell, nothing. We stayed away from religion when the 16 desires. And so I took this criticism seriously. OK, maybe there was a mistake. And so we looked at these 16 desires, and 13 of them are attributes of God. The intrinsic motives that are driving human behavior are the attributes of God. Now, that makes sense. I mean, because God is the greatest imaginable, the most valuable being that human beings are capable of. And in fact, that's what the new book shows, that there's a match between the fundamental forces driving our lives and how those are expressed in religion, that God is the greatest imaginable expression of 13 of 16 basic desires. Why not all 16? Well, God doesn't have a Judeo-Christian God doesn't have a body. And so there are intrinsic motives that the human being has that you don't have with a spiritual being. But in other religions, these other three are played out, too. So so we discovered it based on someone calling in from a radio show.
And this you found true over the span of thousands of religions, well, hundreds of religions, or at least the main ones.
Well, the main ones, in order to be popular, you have to appeal to these desires. These are the desires that move people. So this is what these drive our values. So religion, to be about values, has to present images, beliefs, practices that people value. And the only way it can do that is to address the 16 basic desires.
What's the main reason for religion? Did you prioritize them that way?
I don't know if there's a main reason for religion. People are diverse, and we are individuals to a great extent. Spirituality is not a one-size-fits-all thing. There are spiritual personalities. The God that is most appealing to one person may differ from the God. Someone else may need a different God. You know, someone may need a God of peace. Someone else may need a God of war. I mean, those are the observations of William James, for example. And our research just fills in a whole bunch of details along those lines. Now, there is one area where religion tends to take both sides of issues. And there's one area where it's consistent psychologically, and that's in morality. Religion praises morality, and honorable people in our research are a little more likely to be religious. I don't know if religion has anything good to say about expedience or opportunism, for example. So if you're an expedient person or an opportunistic person, religion may appeal to you less because it's preaching to you morals.
How do some religions attract so many different kinds of people?
That's a real challenge. You have human beings come in opposites. We have opposite values. We have opposite personality traits. Take a simple example everyone's familiar with. The extrovert values fellowship. The extrovert goes to parties. The extrovert values having fun. But then there are introverts. The introvert values solitude, values meditation, values quietude. And religion has to appeal to both of them, these people. The introvert thinks the extrovert's superficial. The extrovert thinks the introvert is too shy and is missing out on a lot of fun in life. And they each have these two different values. Now, one possibility is religion could take a side. It could say, oh, God blesses fellowship. And then you're going to attract extroverts to your religion because you're supporting them and you're helping them find meaning in their life. But you're contradicting the meaning in the lives of introverts. So maybe you should do it the other way around. Maybe say God blesses meditation. God blesses solitude. God doesn't think much of fellowship. You can teach. Preach it that way. Well, if you do it that way, then the introverts will be in your, you'll have disproportionate numbers of introverts. What religion actually does is it appeals to both sides. It contradicts itself, and the contradictions are matched to the contradictions in personality, to the contradictions in human nature. They're not errors in theology. They're efforts to be inclusive. Their efforts to have everybody in the religion. So they have festivals for extroverts and they have retreats for introverts. God blesses both introverts and extroverts. And so the religion tries to have a home for both and appeal to both. And that's true for all 16 of these basic desires.
And the main religions in the world.
Yeah. You, in order to have big numbers, you have to appeal to both sides. And the more basic basic desires you do it, the more these 16 things you're on both sides of the issues, the more inclusive is your religion and the more you can have, a big population in it.
You started out the book with case studies of a couple different people. One was a very family-oriented person, and another person was very intellectually oriented. Can you talk about how you compared and contrasted them?
Yeah, everybody embraces the 16 desires, but people value them differently. So, for example, everybody is motivated by family life, but some people, family is everything, and for others, family is not everything. Everybody would rather understand than be confused, but some people have extreme understanding, like me, and so I'm an intellectual. Everybody values safety, but some people value it much more than others. They're the timid people, and the ones who don't value it are the brave people. So we find there's 16 desires, and we prioritize and value them differently. How you prioritize and value the 16 desires is your spiritual personality, and it corresponds very closely to what you like about religion. So if you have a very strong need for family, you will find meaningful, for example, Christian teachings about God the Father, the support for family that comes from your church. But if you, say, have a strong need for understanding, you may find great meaning in theology, and you may be attracted to that aspect of your religion. So your spiritual personality, how you value the 16 basic desires, corresponds very closely to what you like and don't like about your religion. And this is true regardless of how religious you are.
Right. It doesn't matter. I mean, certain people don't. People who have a high value for curiosity don't necessarily go to a certain kind of religion, but it's how they operate within that, whatever religion they're in.
Both. If you have a very high need for curiosity, a very high need to understand things, you will gravitate towards theology, and that is what you would like
about religion. The study of religion,
yeah,
right.
The study of religion. But there may be some religions that emphasize that more than others, that are more into being more intellectual. So, for example, one of the 16 desires is status, okay? I'm an extremely low person on status. I do not value status very much. And compared to other people, I'm really low on it. So Hinduism is way too status oriented for me.
That is
an aspect. Yeah, the caste system. I mean, I just can't imagine how other people could find that, you know, part of their religion. That's just one aspect of religion I don't like. But it's also, that's an aspect that values that. Now, Christianity, on the other hand, God blesses says that the poor will inherit the earth. The downtrodden are valued and are blessed. And it's much less less of a status oriented. So it's both your personality is corresponding to the religion, regardless of the religion, but the religions differ, have project different values.
But if you are very status oriented and are, let's say, raised in the Christian church, you're going to find that whatever status there is in the church, that's what you'll gravitate toward.
Right. You're going to have the height of the church hierarchy, for example, or you might be important to you to be in a wealthy a church that, you know, looks like it costs a lot of money to put up, you know, is very ornate and expensive, that kind of a thing. So you'll look to satisfy your need for status through your religion.
My guest, we're talking about the new psychology of religious experiences. My guest is the author of a book on that topic. It's entitled The 16 Strivings for God, The New Psychology of Religious Experience. His name is Stephen Reese. He's a best-selling author, former retired Ohio State University psychology professor. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the psychology behind religious experience and the 16 basic human needs that drive them. Still with us is retired Ohio State University psychology professor Stephen Reese. He's the author of several books, including the best-selling Who Am I? The 16 Basic Desires That Motivate Our Actions and Define Our Personalities. His newest book is entitled The 16 Strivings for God, The New Psychology of Religious Experiences. If you have a question or comment for Stephen Reese, give us a call, 614-292-8517, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. Or you can also go on to Twitter at @WOSUAllSides. Why are some people religious and others not? Then what's the striving? What's the 16 traits determines whether someone will be agnostic or atheistic?
Well, I think one thing that drives atheism, or let's say is very important for atheism, is the basic desire for independence. People differ in how self-reliant they are and in how independent they are. Religious people tend to be what we call low for independence. They're interdependent. They value support much more than disproportionately. They want to be supported by God, or they in mysticism they want to unite even with the absolute, with reality. Atheists are much more self-reliant. They don't want other people telling them what to do. They don't even want God telling them what to do. And so so independence is a key thing. I gave a little talk before campus, Ohio State ministers, and when I got to this point, one of them burst out and literally jumped out of his seat and asked me if I knew what Lucifer said about this. And actually, I didn't. And he told me that Lucifer said that when the devil comes back, you know, he basically would be an independent kind of a person. And, you know, there was a lot of agreement right there that in interdependent people, they enjoy being supported. They like knowing they can trust others to meet their needs. And statistically, that's a significant difference between religious and non-religious people.
You wrote that even if desires have a genetic origin, culture and upbringing could play a significant role in determining the strength of each desire. Tell us about what you mean with the genetic origin and how that could be affected by, you know, upbringing.
All right. Well, what it is we want, there are two things to an intrinsic motive: what you want and how much you want, and then there's also how you satisfy it. So it's, I think, genetic that everybody prefers understanding to confusion. it's genetic that everybody would rather prefer safety to anxiety. But how you make yourself safe? What you study if you're an intellectual? All of this can be influenced by your parents, by your culture, by your upbringing. If you're brought up in a home of professors, you may turn to book learning to satisfy your intellectual needs, for example, because that's what's being encouraged. But if you're brought up in a different with different parents, they'll find some other way to satisfy the need for understanding. Maybe it wouldn't be so much reading or reading of a particular subject, and the cultures may differ in how they value the different desires too.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Gabriel and Bexley are on the air. Hi, Gabriel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask, with these 16 traits of personality and religion, is there a correlation when you have specifically less of a trait to curiosity or understanding that can make someone get very entrenched in their political beliefs to the point that they don't even listen to logic or reason, and they're so convinced that they're right that their beliefs overcome any common sense?
Well, if there's a desire to understand and curiosity, and some people, most people obviously are average, and some people are above average, and as you point out, some people are below average. The people who are below average do not like to think. It's not that they have a political view or that they're stubborn. It's that they don't like to think. And stubbornness, which is part of what you're saying, that goes to the desire for independence. Independent people are stubborn. So if you have an above-average need for stubbornness, for independence, and a below-average need for understanding, for curiosity, you may be behaving in the way of the person you're describing. You may be stubbornly holding to resisting thinking about alternative things.
Gabriel, thanks a lot for your call. Anybody else out there, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Stephen Reese, author of the book, The 16 Strivings for God, The New Psychology of Religious Experiences. One point you make is that fear of death is not the primary force driving people to religion. That was a common philosophy for a long time, and that kind of goes to that issue of fellowship and interdependence, but it's not as simple as an issue of fear.
Right. Many social scientists say that people turn to religion because they're afraid of dying. A human being is the only animal that is aware that they're going to die, and so they create religion. They create a god who's going to protect them. They believe in an afterlife because these things reduce the fear of death. Now, according to my view, religion does reduce the fear of death with some beliefs, such as an afterlife, but it also increases the fear of death. For example, the fires of hell. If God came to you and said, create me a religion that will make people less afraid of dying, you would leave out the fires of hell. The fires of hell make people more afraid of dying. You would not have this idea that God is going to judge you after you die, because that's scary. That increases the fear of dying. So with respect to the fear of dying, religion increases the fear, some aspects of it, and other aspects of it decrease the fear. This is how it allows both brave and courageous people to find a home in religion, because the religion is supporting both sets of values. With all 16 basic desires, you see some aspects of religion that support it and some aspects of religion that support the opposite. And that's true with the fear of death, too. So it both makes you more afraid and makes you less afraid, depending on what you choose to focus on.
In your book, you mentioned that everyone has a spiritual personality, regardless of how religious he or she is. What is a spiritual personality?
Well, a spiritual personality would be your values. So it basically is how you value universal values, how universal desires, these 16 desires, because of the differences is in valuation. So there are 16 desires, but there are 32 values because they come in opposite. So there's valuing each desire and there's devaluing each desire. So so that then is your spiritual personality.
What about religious intolerance? Where does that fit into this paradigm? Does it go to the people who don't want to think, so they take things very literally?
I think human beings are naturally intolerant, and this is a big challenge for society. We look within ourselves, we discover how we value a basic desire, and we think we've learned something about human nature when we've just learned about ourselves. So, for example, the extrovert looks within himself and says, wow, socializing is a great joy. Socializing is wonderful, and has no concept that half the world has the opposite view. And the introvert looks within themselves and thinks the same, thinks the opposite, thinks, wow, solitude is wonderful. Socializing is no fun. And then each thinks they've discovered what's best, not just for them, but for everybody. And they're so convinced of it because they trust their own feelings above everything else. And so the extrovert looks at the introvert and says, you've got to be less shy. And the introvert looks at the extrovert and says, you've got to be less superficial. And so you have an intolerance. You have a value conflict, and people are intolerant of opposite values. They have no way to appreciate them because they judge everything through their own values and through their own feelings.
What's interesting with, you know, a point that you make in the book is that even though it's good for discussion purposes to think about things in terms of opposites, no one is all one or all the other of anything, and that they're everywhere all along a continuum. It's very complicated.
That's right. Nobody is a total extrovert or a total introvert. We're all mixtures, and we all sort of fall between. Most of us fall between extroverts and introverts. And so we can at different times appreciate socializing and appreciate solitude. It's the proportions and mix that is important.
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering about the issue of it's one thing to think about all of these 16 strivings, these 16 personality traits, and how you've studied them with your 100,000 person survey, but how can religion be studied scientifically?
We can
assert what people are attracted to, but religion in and of itself, are they marketing experts and are thinking about who they're going to attract the most people with?
Over the years, they seem to have figured out how to attract a lot of by trial and error, maybe, or however. Mm-hmm. They seem to have hit on what is really the most meaningful things. Tolerance is really an important issue. It's an important issue in personal lives, and it's an important issue between religions. Just about everybody says that motivation, what drives us, is energy, psychic energy. Okay? I'm just about the only person who says it's values. We are a species motivated to assert our values. So it's values that drive us to religion. It's different values that drive us away from religion in some cases. And it's values that cause us to relate each other. And we're naturally intolerant of each other's values. So wherever you have argument, wherever you have an unhappy person or a conflict, you can always find a value conflict with one of these 16 different desires. And so the religions, as I say, some of them are emphasizing different values. Christianity is emphasizing family. Christianity is very low on vengeance, is about peace and peacefulness. Some other religions are more warlike and are more, okay. These are value conflicts. And it's really hard to resolve a value conflict because you need a greater value, and there aren't very many values. There are only 16 of them, and if you have a big value conflict, it's hard to find a greater value conflict you share to resolve the conflict. So the only way sometimes to get people together is tolerance. It's almost like the way I think, at least, is that, you know, the world has a choice. Either learn to tolerate our differences, or we're going to basically blow ourselves up and destroy ourselves up, maybe in religious wars, maybe in non-religious wars. But the only alternative to tolerance is value conflict, because we come in opposite values. Human beings have opposite values. They have opposite personalities, and they embrace opposite religious ideas and beliefs.
An email from Cody asks, how does the book and research apply to those looking to join extreme groups, ISIS, Boko Haram, that sort of thing?
Well, that's not a specific. I mean, I understand that's a big topic. Mm-hmm. I think you could look at the research, and you can say, what is the personality of someone who would go to an extreme group? And I think certainly there's an extreme need for vengeance, for violence that some people have, that a small number have, that could be satisfied. But I think a lot of these groups are what we call high on honor. I think they're being motivated in part by honor. The basic desire for honor is about morality, but it's also about loyalty to your ancestors. And I think that loyalty to ancestors is partially what's motivating people here. You possibly could profile people who are likely to join a group by looking at the 16 desires.
To say it's honor doesn't mean that we agree on what is honorable. It's just that basic personality trait is in play.
Exactly. That's right.
We're talking about the relationship between personality traits and religion. My guest is Stephen Reese. He's the author of a new book. It's entitled The 16 Strivings for God, The New Psychology of Religious Experience. You may recognize his name. He's also the author of the best-selling Who Am I? The 16 Basic Desires That Motivate Our Actions and Define Our Personalities. Question or comment, you still have time to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We've been talking about psychology and religion and how all human motives, religious or not, are a combination of some sort of 16 basic desires or psychological needs. Still joining us is retired Ohio State University psychology professor and best-selling author Stephen Reese. His newest book is entitled The 16 Strivings for God, The New Psychology of Religious Experience. You said that religious people are more conscientious than non-religious people. What do you mean by that? Or why is that the case?
I'm not sure why it is the case. If you test the people who say they're religious, they score higher on scales of conscientiousness, scales of charity, idealism, humanitarianism, honor, and morality. So that's the basis for the statement. The way I think it is because religion has nothing good to say about people who are not conscientious, so those people stay away from religion. I think it's attracting disproportionate numbers of conscientious people because it's supporting their view. I personally don't think it's converting people and making them more conscientious. I think it's attracting them. But you can argue this either way, I guess. But that's my view, is it's very hard to change people. I think psychologists have oversold change. I think people don't change anywhere near as much as they say. Therefore, I think that's why it's attracting conscientious people.
We started to talk off the air, and you started to talk about the issue of, you know, what does this all mean and what purpose does it have? This isn't a book that's written necessarily for other academics. It's written for the general population to make us more aware of these things in ourselves. What difference does it make if we can't necessarily change?
I think that we have a motto, or I have a motto, that it's better to marry the right person to begin with than to need a counselor to help you get along with someone else. So understanding your basic desires, your values, helps you make better choices in life, helps you make realize who you're going to get along with over the long term, what kinds of jobs you're going to like and so on, and what you like about your religion and what you're going to not like about your religion. So self-awareness is a good way to go, because, as I say, once you've married the wrong person and you're in marriage counseling, well, marriage counseling sometimes works and it can help, but you're so much better off not being there, because it really isn't, you know, all that super duper effective.
Nate in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Nate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really enjoyed the show so far. I wonder if, out of your survey, if many who identified as Scientologists, and which of the 16 traits you found they scored high and low on?
I'm not familiar with the answer is no. I'm not familiar with with Scientology, but I. What aspects of Scientology are you interested in? Maybe I can guess.
It's a religion with some very unusual tenets and beliefs, and it seems highly rigid a little bit harsh to outsiders who have different beliefs. And I wonder what kinds of personality traits might lead one to follow it. You mentioned earlier the trait of status being something that was driving some people towards certain religions. I wonder if that might be something that relates to Scientology, because of these various statuses that one can achieve in
really,
that religion.
Really, in other words, really famous people are part of the religion, or?
Well, I think that this is a fascinating study that you've done, where you find that people who identify with certain religions score higher or lower on certain personality traits, and I'm just curious about that one in particular.
Okay, well, certainly, like I know Tom Cruise is a Scientologist. Okay,
right.
So identifying with Tom Cruise, you're correct. That would be motivated by status, and if you liked Scientology because you think it's special, it would be satisfying a need for status. In some circles, Scientology, in some countries, I understand Scientology is frowned on, and so it would actually then be low status in those countries that it would attract. But you may well be right that here it's high status. And then the other things is it's a little bit unusual and different. And to go your own way, to be a nonconformist, that's independence, right? You have to be willing to be a little bit independent. If people criticize you for being a Scientologist, you're going to pick up the newspaper and read bad things about it. That goes to the basic desire for acceptance. You have to be a secure person, which is a low desire for acceptance, to tolerate that. You have to be a confident person to tolerate the criticism well. So those would be some of the motives that, you know, that you would look at. I hadn't specifically looked at Scientology.
All right, Nate, thanks a lot for that question. Email from Susan in Canal Winchester. She writes, I'm interested in how the theory Dr. Reese is espousing overlaps with gender and generations. For instance, the mainstream Protestant church continues to struggle to engage both men and young people. Are there psychological needs specific to men or to millennials that make involvement in the mainstream Christian church less attractive?
There are gender differences in the basic desires. men score higher, for example, on a need for vengeance. Men are more aggressive. Women, I think there were no differences on family. I think men perhaps scored higher on independence. So there are some gender differences, but they're small. This is something social scientists know that you don't often hear people discuss in public, but, you know, I may have a statistically significant gender difference. I could give you a male profile and a female profile, but the difference is tiny compared to the kinds of things that we would predict, like whether or not you would be religious or not religious and things like that. Your relationship outcomes depend on your profile. They don't depend very much, on the gender differences. There also are some small racial differences that can have. Now, also keep in mind, we only have 100,000 people. Well, that's a lot for a psychologist. It's not like just a group of college students. It's not a lot in terms of the whole population. So, you know, if you keep going up and you get huge numbers, sometimes these small differences get even smaller. But there are a couple differences, yes.
Pat in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you so much for your very interesting show. My question for your guest is, does the Myers-Briggs personality testing reflect any of these 16 values?
Well, you know, it's hard to find an academic. It's hard to find who has anything good to say about the Myers-Briggs. I personally think that it's based on a lot of good insight. But for years, people have come to us and said, we're going to replace the Myers-Briggs with the 16 desires. And they're still coming. And it hasn't happened yet. So even though no one has anything good to say about it, it's been a very tough kind of competition. But they only have four types. Where it's similar, where the two theories are basically the same, is they're both saying people are different, and we have to learn to appreciate, respect, and tolerate those differences. They both have the same messages, and then they really differ in terms of how they describe people. When I was at Ohio State teaching, I found that giving both the Myers-Briggs and the Reese profile, which is my test, was better than just giving one test, because people would get different results sometimes, and that would stimulate them. That would get them thinking about why the results were different. And that's really good for self-discovery, which is what each of these tests are supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Pat, for that call. Aestheticism, I guess, mm-hmm. is the better pronunciation. The severe self-discipline and avoidance of all forms of indulgence is something you touch upon in your book. People usually seek pleasure and reject pain, but aesthetics do the opposite.
Right. Psychologists are always explaining things in terms of pleasure theory. People try to maximize pleasure and minimize pain. But as you point out, aesthetics and aestheticism associated with religions, they do the exact opposite. They reject beauty. They say they reject sex. So sometimes they even embrace pain. So what could possibly be motivating love of the discomfort? And this goes back to the idea that everything comes in opposites. And I think the opposite of a romantic personality is an aesthetic personality. I think there's a continuum between being a romantic person and being an aesthetic person. So the romantic person embraces sex and beauty and pleasure and sensuality, and the aesthetic is rejecting all three. We come in opposites, and so I think it's a low need for all the things that go into romanticism that you see. And I could be wrong about this, but I don't think Myers-Briggs has good, deals with aestheticism, for example.
An email from a listener. First, a statement. They write, I think the understanding of grace dictates their affinity to God, not religion.
Well, grace is about power psychologically. And I'm a psychologist. And so the idea of power. The people who value power tend to be leaders, and they tend to value leadership, and they tend to be ambitious people. And the opposites of that are your laid back people. But Derrida touches on an important point that a lot of people who are particularly religious, or some religious people, feel, which is that there's something more, there's something beyond the science, there's something beyond the psychology. In my book, I say, fine. I said that may very well be true. And there may very well be this spiritual dimension, and I'm not in any way advocating atheism, and I'm not advocating theism. I'm just trying to understand religion. I'm not making assumptions to promote it or to criticize it. I'm trying to just help people understand their spirituality. So if you believe in God, that's fine with me. And you know, people, when you talk to me, you're talking to a psychologist. If you want to know about God beyond psychology, beyond the desires, talk to a priest, talk to a theologian. They're the experts on that. I'm trying to stay within my expertise, and so it is valid that there are a lot of people who share who share this view that there's more than science, there's more than psychology, and I'm not going to agree or disagree with that view. All I can do is try to elucidate the psychology and try to stay within the limits of what I actually know.
What about people who say they've experienced mystical, you know, moments of mysticism? They've had religious experiences. What's the difference there?
Yeah, mysticism is very probably kind of increasingly popular, and I think it's behind this idea that I'm spiritual but not religious, meaning I'm mystical. Even if you go back to William James, who talked about having mystical experiences, mm-hmm. He didn't care much for what he called organized religion. I think that an extreme valuation of harmony and an extreme valuation of interdependence, there was weak independence. Those two things, I think, make mystical experiences much more likely to happen than otherwise.
I don't know if that's judging the whether or not they occur.
No, the science cannot tell you whether or not they occur. Mm-hmm. Science can psychology don't know. Psychologists are not. I am not a priest. I am not a rabbi. I am not, a theologian. Ask them. They ask them. These are theological questions, mm-hmm. and ask them. But theologians are not the only people who have something to say about religion. Religion is a powerful psychological force. It's a powerful cultural force. And then, the clergy do more counseling than psychologists. So there's a legitimacy to a psychologist studying religion. And that's what I'm doing, and I'm trying to stay within the bounds. I think the book is very respectful to religion, and it points out very clearly that no way is these ideas justification for atheism.
Have you gotten any feedback from religious leaders?
We have some, people. We have some who like it, and some maybe. The book is only out a month.
Right.
Where we have some feedback is from the media, particularly in abroad in England, where like I'll say, most every religious belief is one of 16 basic desires, and some of the papers added just one of 16 basic desires, implying that there was no spirit. Well, I didn't say just, and uh-huh. It doesn't say just anywhere in that book, for example. They put their word in my mouth. I discovered that psychologists are not popular in religion, and someone explained to me that's because Freud diagnosed everybody, and I can understand that would make psychologists unpopular. But, I mean, I don't diagnose anybody, and I'm not doing that. Okay, so this is sort of a different approach.
Well, thank you for joining us today to talk about it. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
That is former Ohio State University, retired Ohio State University professor Stephen Reese. He's the author of a new book. It's called The 16 Strivings for God, The New Psychology of Religious Experiences. Thanks to the AllSides staff, Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Shyla Knott, AllSides interns Trent Lammers, Ryan McFadden, and Sydney Schaefer, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks again for listening. This is AllSides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.